Good morning and welcome to The Bridge, Coast Community Radio's own weekly news magazine. I'm your host, Kate Brister. We have a special edition of The Bridge this morning. All summer long, we've seen the Astoria Column shrouded and scaffolded. We gasped when the windstorm at the end of August tore the covering away and damaged some of the new work. We were disgusted and dismayed when vandals broke in just a few weeks ago, splashing paint about the base. Not to worry, the Astoria Column is on track to reopen tomorrow. For most of us, progress on the column's been tracked in the papers and on the Astoria Column updates Wednesday mornings. But weren't you curious to go up there and see how the work was progressing? I was, and Liam Dunn was too. He took a recorder to the column and climbed to the top, talking with painters and designers on the way. We take that trip this morning to the top of the column with Coast Community Radio's own Liam Dunn.
You're listening to Coast Community Radio. My name is Liam, and that's all you need to know.
It's Monday, September 28th, and Liam's here doing a travelogue right here at the Astoria Column at the top of Coxcomb Hill.
Take a walk, me, will you? Okay, we're just starting to walk up on the scaffolding at the Astoria Column, along with the lead scenic, some of the painters, foremen, and Turn Point students. We're about 20 feet off the ground right now. Massive scaffolding, sheeting, harnesses, hard hats, no coffee, no liquids, no way down if you need a bathroom break.
So I want you guys to focus on starting with this row, I think, right?
Which row? Which one?
You're serving the center one.
Hey, Jean. Stand up here. So, I think you guys need to focus on the spine
on this row. Yep.
Okay, so this is, for instance, something that's not right. So we have this fix-it shadow, which probably needs to be fixed, right? Going pretty much all the way. It should taper as it comes out to the point. But then the very next aspect of this shadow should be a split rail line following just underneath it. So that's what you guys are doing. Fixing all of these.
This is the sound of the scaffolding at the Astoria Column. And I'm with
John Gutenberger.
Okay. John, describe what we're seeing here.
Well,
what is this?
We're up on the second level, and we're standing between two different friezes. The frieze spirals around the column. And the lower frieze is kind of the primeval forest. The upper frieze is a scene of a Native American village. It's done in sgraffito. Sgraffito is similar to fresco, except you're incising back into the plaster itself. So when Pusterla was here, he had full-size drawings up in his little donut scaffold. He started at the top, worked his way down. He had full-size drawings of everything on the column.
Wow.
All the figures
all the objects,
were done. Everything was
full
done.
Size, and he
full size.
Put them on and traced them or something?
So he put the gray coat down first, then he puts a brown coat, and from that he put the tracing up and then pounced it. Pouncing means it has little holes in the outlines of the cartoons or the drawings, blows powder through that, pulls the drawing off, sees the outline, takes his trowel, and starts to incise around those images. He also uses those incisions to give him clues, such as, oh, there's musculature here, I need to make sure I paint that in. Or here, there's going to be shadow, so I'm going to make a bunch of marks here for that. So all of that helps inform the painters, the artists, as they are restoring these images. One of the things I really like here on this particular scene in the forest, we have these little dots.
Yeah, what are they? They're riddled throughout the whole thing, as if it looks as if there's holes in it.
Specifically, he took his trowel and tapped it in to create a little bit more texture in the background there.
Otherwise, everything would look too flat.
Too flat.
Okay.
Exactly. And in this raking light, you can actually start to see those graffito marks going through to create the trees, the branches, etc.
How many levels of scaffolding are we going to climb here?
We're going to climb 16 levels.
And 16 we're on, levels?
And we're on level 2 now.
Good thing I didn't drink any coffee.
So here we are. We're on the west side. South and the west side get the most wear and tear with the wind and the rain.
Okay.
On the east side, we're putting one coat. On the south and the west, we're putting two coats of paint. So here we have Scotch tape over the images telling us how many coats it has. So we're standing here in front of the ship Columbia. You know, Captain Gray's ship as he's pulling into the river and quote-unquote discovering it after all these natives have been here. The indigenous yeah. culture has been here for centuries and thousands of years. Here he is discovering it, and here's his ship, and it says that it has two coats. So what that means is everything, all the shadows, all the highlights, the background has to be painted twice.
Wow.
So as the wind comes and blows it away,
yeah,
there's still another coat of
enough
highlight
underneath
below
to hold it together, to hold right. the image together.
Yeah.
And does the UV rays affect it on
no.
one side more than the other?
No. The UV rays do not affect this German paint. It's a mineral-based paint. It adheres, it retains its color. The reason the images were lost, and we lost, say, 20-ish percent or 30% okay. in the last 20 years, is because the weather is so bad.
Okay.
It's being blown away. It's not fading.
Okay. Weather erosion.
Right. Here we have examples. This is a core sample.
Okay.
Here, and it's going right through the middle of Robert Gray.
You Early, bore a hole into
right.
into the column itself.
Into the column
and
itself.
What does that tell
it
you?
It goes all the way through, or it went all the way through. So we're okay. checking the structural integrity of the concrete.
Uh-huh.
Also the integrity of the plaster itself. And in this location, there are three vertical cracks. There's one on the south. We're standing on the south. There's one on the west, and there's one on the east. In this case, where they drilled all the way through, that crack went all the way through.
Through the whole column.
Through the whole column.
Good now, thing you found that out.
Well, and in the structural analysis, they did GPR, which is ground penetrating radar. They went all over the surface of the column, and they found the mesh of rebar. This structure is so well built, even if there is a crack that goes all the way through, it's not a big deal. And these vertical cracks happen on every lighthouse. They happen on every smokestack. It's just the way that they kind of expand and contract with the heat, with the wind.
Okay.
And if they have the rebar, it's not a big deal. Plus, in the 1970s, we added more structure behind that. We put in some steel rings and more mesh and then blue shotcrete on the inside. So there's lots of structure. We're not going to fall down.
It's going to stay here.
It's going to stay here.
We're going to move on. The sun's coming up. It's getting a little warmer. We're maybe 70, 80 feet up in the air. The scaffolding looks pretty good. And we'll keep moving here as workers pass us. Hi there. How you doing? It's one of the Tongue Point people running around scurrying, or not, maybe. Yeah. So, are we a third of the way up by now?
No.
No? Not even that?
Not even that.
No, it's going to be a long morning. It's a beautiful, beautiful, bright, clear morning here as we look out over the Columbia River, the ships, the ocean, everything off in view, Saddle Mountain, the Youngs River. It's beautiful up here.
So I want to point out the medallions.
Okay.
The medallions are portraits. They're portraits of some of the main characters on the column. So we're standing in front of Robert Gray.
Hi, Robert. What's up, man?
So these portraits introduce the themes on the column, but it also allows Pusterla to have a little bit of slop. So imagine mm-hmm. he's starting 110 feet in the air with his drawings. They're spiraling diagonally down the column, and he has to have everything end at the right location.
Oh, that's hard to do. How do you calculate
how
that
do you
mathematically?
Calculate that? So you have some slop areas. We have areas that introduce characters. We have areas that break up scenes. And this is one of the ways that he does that. He also does that vertically by having, say, lots of clouds at the top or lots of bushes at the bottom so that he can keep everything aligned. So here we have Robert Gray.
And who's basically used as slop in some way.
In an artistic way.
Yeah, an exalted artistic way.
Right.
He has his uses. Up we go again. Yeah, the column, it's got no smell to it. I just tried to breathe in any scent. It doesn't smell like anything, and it's pretty rough to the touch, but not that rough. But it's got a definite texture, and even where many of the paint lines are, it's also sculpted into, right?
Correct.
It's like a very slight 3D effect.
Bas relief, very slight bas relief. Yeah.
Ah. This is really good.
So here we have three more figures. Lewis,
it's so
Clark,
bright. I mean, the
Jefferson.
Whites here, I'm used to looking at this, you know, and it being, you know, faded, but now being up close to it, like, what, 2 feet away from it, like, it's very bright. It's very vibrant.
So you see the nice shadows that will be put in to give this a three-dimension.
Yeah.
So we're trying to recreate three-dimension on the column, visually, three-dimension on the column. See, the column texture is changing as we get higher up on this side. It becomes much more cracked.
Why is that? Oh, that's just
because it's the weathering. It's the weathering of this side versus the side that gets protected.
And you have to then paint it a certain way according to the deterioration to keep a uniform look. How does that work?
It's mostly just adding a second coat. The paint that we're using is thick, and it fills in many of those cracks. We also have been using a primer in some areas that's super thick to fill in those cracks.
Okay, onwards and upwards.
Yeah. Here we have, I think I always like this. This is the scene of the boiling of the seawater.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So here we can look out.
Salt cairns.
We can
see
Tillamook Head. And here we have Tillamook Head here.
Reproduced.
Except he reversed the image of it. And it's not because he's dyslexic, not because he's not thinking. He's using this as a device to move into another scene. So this is framing a scene. And that kind of authenticity is less important than creating a scene.
Right. He's manipulating reality for artistic sake. And composition.
So it moves into this forest scene where they're creating Fort Clatsop.
Chop, chop, chop.
So we're moving up to level 5 now.
Yeah.
Level 7. We can come back here if the wind picks up because this acts as a flute.
You can play the scaffolding
like
a flute because the scaffolding is hollow tubing and there's holes in it. And at times when the wind blows through, it makes musical notes. And you can press your finger on some of the openings and leave the others open. And you can actually almost, if you had long enough arms, you could play the scaffolding like a flute.
Yes.
We'll have to reproduce this scaffolding later on and do it. It's extremely quiet up here. You think with scaffolding and people walking around, there'd be a hubbub of activity, and you'd hear it. It's like it's very serene up here.
And it was even more so when we had the wrap around it, because we were within this white wrap, this mesh. You were in your own little world up here, and just painting.
And
the wind wasn't coming through. You can see, by the way, you can see one piece there, and through the forest, there's some more.
The wrap that was round all the scaffolding, what was that consisted of? What was the material?
It was like a plastic. A very thick plastic.
And
kept the rain out. Right. Let the air in.
And I notice now that most of it is gone and the piece is just left on the top. Is that?
It's a different fabric on the top. That's kind of a roof. It's a solid plastic up on top. Stretched like a drum.
how long ago did that blow away?
That was the end of August.
End of August. Were you here on the day that the wind actually whipped that out?
No, just... I did not. I was not here that day.
Oh, you were lucky. You were off, probably having lunch somewhere.
No, right.
Young man! You look so happy and smiling, and you got your hard hat on, your glasses, and your hoodie, and you're all covered in paint. Why? What's your name?
Stephen LaRose.
Let's do that again.
Stephen LaRose.
French. Stephen LaRose. And,
there's a beret under this helmet.
There is?
Yeah.
Ah-ha! Baguette. Where are you from originally?
Seattle.
Seattle.
Yeah.
What do you do there?
Make paintings.
You make paintings?
Yeah.
Any particular form?
No, I love to paint, so I do it all.
And could you describe what you're doing here?
At the present moment, I'm touching up, looking for things, holes, essentially, I guess, that might...
Visual holes.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I mean, you can't really point to them. No actual physical holes in the color.
Okay.
That might betray a place that could wear easier than other places.
I see.
Filling them with the color that should be there. I could use a good example where the colors meet and there's a space in between. You can almost see the concrete or the brown coat underneath.
Okay.
We're nitpicking at this point.
Good.
And simultaneously trying to text someone as to how to mix our favorite color. We have a color called...
Texting on the job. What is this, prep school?
Well, how do you talk about mix 50% of this, 50% of that, and then start adding black?
I have no idea, but I like you already.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get back to you, okay?
Okay.
Good luck.
Am I done? Can I go home?
No, you have to work all day long.
Okay.
And there's no bathroom break. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're all wearing hard hats here, and I was warned before I came here that if you don't wear a hard hat, you know, because you want everybody to see how cool your hair is look, you're going to be banging your head, so it's hard hat town.
So David has been working on the egg and dart. We're actually standing now outside the viewing platform of the Astoria Column.
Oh my God, we are.
And so
now this is surreal, because the only time I've been anywhere near these railings, the outside railings at the top, is on the other side. And if this platform, if this scaffolding wasn't here, we'd be standing out in midair.
110 feet in the air right
this
now.
This is the only way that you can see. Oh, this. You know what? It's funny with the wrap on this, and we're standing outside something, this perspective, it really reminds me of like being on a movie set.
Right.
You know, because you've got all the scaffolding and this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. This is...
So you can see David's working on the egg and dart, and he's... And
what's an egg and dart?
Okay, it's a architectural feature. You have an oval shape that's interspersed?
Interspersed.
Yes, with dart. With dart.
Dart darts.
So you have an egg, you have a dart, you have an egg, and this is used constantly in molding, in cornices, etc. So what you can see that this
has... To produce like a bulbous effect.
Right, you can see that it has shape.
Yeah.
But he's adding extra shadow to make it look even more three-dimensional.
More pronounced, yeah. And, I mean, we're up here like 8 feet away from it, out in the air, and even up this close, it really looks, you know, as if it's totally round,
right.
But it's not.
Right, and so from the bottom, it's going to look like it just disappears into nothing.
Okay. Man, we are up level with the outside viewing platform where normally children would be throwing little balsa wood planes, and they'd be squealing with delight as they sailed off into the trees. And this is wow, man! This is we're up level with the top of the glass dome. Oh, and we can look down into the column. This is wow.
So Katie Rathmel with Ray Bergerson. They were up here a couple of weeks ago doing some repair.
Yeah, that's copper. It's all made of copper.
It's copper, exactly.
Copper and glass.
Dave Green reconstructed this 20 years ago when the column was restored. And so
it smells
we're
like lime up here.
Well, we just redid this parge coat here and here. Before they were here, one of the kind of interesting things, the flashing was really bulging.
Uh-huh.
And it's because
away from the glass.
Away from the glass, and that's because the wind is pushing so hard on this cupola.
At this height.
At this height, it's trying to rotate the cupola around.
And it sounds like a scene from a science fiction movie. And actually, the top of this dome, yeah, it looks like, you know, something out of an H.G. Wells or something.
That's a beautiful cut.
Where? Oh, this. Yeah, I never would have imagined, you know, that I would ever be able to see the outside of the top, the glass cupola on here, but yeah, this is it's really quite. Oh, you've got some new copper pieces too.
Yes, because one of those pieces blew off in the storm of 2007.
And then what happened all the time that it was gone?
Well,
why didn't all the water come in and rot?
Some has, but because we're conservationists, and 20 years ago when the column was restored, we kept the parts from the old cupola. So someone was able to grab the flashing from the old cupola from 1926 and temporarily put it up.
But whoa. Was there scaffolding up here at this point? Okay. No. I can't imagine that. Okay, how can somebody without scaffolding...
They climbed up, they put a ladder below us on the platform.
No. No, they didn't.
Yes, they did.
Really?
Yes, they did.
They put a ladder on a platform, climbed up to the top of the Astoria column, and replaced a copper piece?
Yes.
I'll just have to believe you on that one.
Usually in the morning when I come in, there's birds up here.
Ah!
So, birds flying around. Bird of the day.
Bird of the day, yeah. Which becomes soup du jour, right?
They're hungry artists.
What kind of birds have you had up in here? Like they fly in the bottom underneath the sheathing and they come right in here?
Right, we had a little finch in here earlier and we've had starlings, our favorites. There's no longer stairs or a ladder to this platform.
Oh, this platform, which is the outside viewing platform, is isolated.
It's isolated.
Okay.
So why don't you come...
Boy, yeah, you really have to pay attention here, because with all these different levels, after a while, you can't really tell which level is which, and you can step through things and go falling down.
And step in paint.
Yeah, well, stepping in paint would be all right, but, like, there's this negative space here that if you didn't really, I mean...
Well, we have planks removed.
Yeah.
You can get under there, because they weren't like that at first. So.
This is a pretty complex thing we have going on here. Hey, thank you all. Well, that just about wraps it up. I would like to thank the friends of the column and all of the artists for a once-in-a-lifetime experience of a unique up-close view of the column restoration. Thanks also to our own Kate Brister for post-production assistance and editing. This is Liam Dunn with Coast Community Radio. Thank you for listening.
That's all we have time for on this edition of The Bridge. Our thanks to Liam Dunn for his story, and our special thanks to Friends of the Astoria Column for their cooperation. The Bridge comes to you every Thursday morning at 9:30. If you missed any part of it or just want to hear it again, a podcast will be available on our website at coastalradio.org. We appreciate your questions and comments. Email us at news1, that's N-E-W-S and the numeral 1 at KMUN.org. Put The Bridge in the subject heading. I'm Kate Brister. Thanks for listening. Join us next time on The Bridge.